Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we'll be talking winter wheat and fertilization. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at John Deere, Kinsey, and Ag Leader's new collaboration agreement. Ag History Minute, we'll talk why Easter eggs. Cool Beans, that's Corny. We'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. I know what that music means. It's time for some football. I mean, basketball.
March Madness is here.
It's here.
And it's not the weather.
I think they have a pill.
It is the weather.
I think they have a pill for that now.
Do they?
Take care of the March Madness. Yeah.
It is a cool thing.
Well, we've had pretty lackluster winter weather, so hopefully we have some exciting basketball to watch at least.
Yeah. Lackluster, just wait, man.
Well, wait till tomorrow, man. Yeah.
No, wait till
apparently
now.
We're going
wait
to
now.
Get some weather here, but I don't know. It all seems to depend on where you are. Like, they're talking for us more rain, but then to the west of us could get more snow. So
I don't think they know yet at all. The models are all... So we'll see.
Well, we were watching the other day, and like two models said completely different
things.
One was like an inch, and the other model said five. So you're right, Todd. I don't think they know what's going to happen. Just like buzzer beaters.
Yeah,
right?
we don't know
what's going to happen.
Are you excited for the Badger buzzer beaters, Bill?
Yes, always.
What's the best one of all time?
The best one of all time is Koenigs against Xavier, right. And then watching Bill Murray just lose it,
all right.
Yeah, like stunned.
We'll hear the audio right here then. Just a 3-point in the corner.
Yeah, just a perfect drop of a play and just drained it.
And that was to get to the
Sweet 16.
So, yeah, there's Bill Murray. They're just showing us on Xavier.
Yep, cheering for Xavier, and then no dice.
Over the years, I've seen some videos of people that were in the stands, like a couple rows up behind him. Behind the shot, and that was a cool shot too. It's not the TV feed; it's like someone in the stands with a camera. That was, you watch the players just explode.
What about this one? There's one with Freddie. What do you think of that one?
That was pretty good too. That's an oldie but goodie, and that was a 5-12 like the Badgers are now. So they were a 5 at that point and had the squeaker out. So
here's the end of that game.
Take it, you gotta take it.
Who's gonna take it?
Devin Harris is gonna use penetration, and whoever he finds, wherever the help comes from, is where the shot will come from. They run two at him. Harris on the run. Count. It's a three. Freddie on the lead. That could send them to San Antonio, Minneapolis. That's Petty.
Send them to San Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
But that one was, I mean, it was exactly right. Like the help came to get the ball guy on the ball, and then he just threw to Freddie, who was where this guy just left him, and he was wide open. And it was another corner one, too. Just buried it.
What about the discount double check? Remember when
that was my favorite. Like, they lost the game, and that was like a, because Florida came back right away, and they had their kind of own buzzer beater to beat us. But just that was like a boss moment for Zach, where he just like, that was when it was like peak Rodgers too, where he was following the Badgers. Like, we still liked him. And
oh, how the world has changed.
Right. And so he was in the stands, and he was sitting next to Andy North, who's he's a golf guy, but he's a Badger guy. And he just, like, hit the shot, turns to Rodgers, does the discount thing, and they kind of both, like...
look at each other.
Yeah, it was just cool.
Go up that ladder. One leg. Watch it.
crazy to point to the stands too to do something. That's not right. Usually it doesn't happen. Yeah. So yeah, that is cool.
So those are the three Badger tournaments.
Those are your okay.
That does bring up a good point though. Is that still Rodgers' touchdown celebration? Because he hasn't scored a touchdown since he left Green Bay. Like, will he still do the discount double check, you think?
I don't know. He's got to play more than four plays right. this year.
Right.
Does he, though? Does he?
Doesn't matter to us anymore. So
whatever. No, I know. That's the best part about it.
So is it the best couple days of the year? Like, that was the argument this morning on the radio. Was like, what's the best sports day of the year? Is it Super Bowl? Kuhn was talking about it being the divisional weekend of football. NFL. Like, it's not the wild card, but the divisional.
This is always one of my favorite because it's right at the end of March, so you get really jacked up for spring.
Yep.
And usually we're not quite in the field yet. This year, maybe, it was a little different. We're kind of in the field, but not really yet. And, yeah, I think it's just an awesome time of the year when that theme music just resonates of
– right.
Like, it's spring is coming and Easter's right around the corner. And, yeah, you kind of watch a few, listen to a few basketball games, and then we're ready to be on the fields. What do you think is the best?
It's hard because, like, this is a really, like, fun time because it's, like, game, right? It's, like, you can watch from 11 o'clock in the morning till midnight, and it's meaningful games. It's probably one of the days of the year that you care about Montana State, right? You couldn't.
Yeah, who cares
about right? Who cares about yeah. that? But you're going to care about them because if they're close against Arizona or whoever they're playing, you're going to watch it, right? It just because it's a meaningful game, like loser goes home. So it's kind of fun.
Call for no time for a pass. First guy that touches it.
Hey, looks like Jones could go right to the basket.
Some more buzzer beaters. Oh, I thought this was the It's Awesome Baby. Sorry, that's what I had cued. There it is. Yeah. It's Awesome Baby. That's yep. what, yeah.
Good old Dickie V.
Yep.
So it'll be fun.
No, it'll be great. It'll be good. Go Badgers, go Wisconsin teams. And it's always fun to cheer for underdogs. That's what's cool about mm-hmm. this, too, is a lot of times in all the other sports, you aren't picking some random underdog to cheer for. You're picking this team you like or something like that, and a team you probably didn't see all year that you think would be cool, so be a lot of fun.
All right. You guys ready to talk some winter wheat?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, let's do it.
So this year has been kind of a different winter, like we were talking. A lot of open fields and warm temperatures, so things were waking up a little earlier than... Especially when the further south you get, the more you see a lot more green. And so this year was the question of like, oh, is it too early to go with wheat? Like, when should we go? Do we want to wake it up? What kind of weather are we going to get? So why do we even spread wheat this time of year? And so I think that's kind of where you're going for here, Bill, right?
Yeah, I guess that was kind of some topics we had this week was like, should we be spreading now? Should we wait? Like... There's no snow. Normally we have snow potentially now. We don't have muddy conditions. Like today's one of the coldest mornings we've had in a long time. Like just driving over here, I saw three separate applicators in the field going and they really weren't making a mess. But is it too early? Are we going to lose the nitrogen? Are we going to do any good to the plants? So I just kind of wanted to go through some of the factors. I guess first thing is obviously plants need plant food, right? But what does nitrogen do? Early season and serves as kind of two factors. Basically add tillers, right? We put the nitrogen out there to promote tillering, which increases population, which increases the number of heads, which increases yield, right? It all kind of comes together. And it also supplies the nutrient need for the protein production of the plant. So that's what the two things that it really, really does. But after tillering concludes, there's a big uptake. So we just want to make sure, like, again, this is like a timing thing. So we get the nitrogen out there to promote tillering. Then we get the stem elongation, which is jointing. And that begins. And then there's also another bump at actually 100 to 150 pounds. So it's taking up some soil N, but also taking up N that you've already applied. So we got to make sure that that's definitely when it needs it is then.
Yeah, got to make sure it gets fit.
Right, we want to make sure it's then.
I think that tillering part for yield is extremely important.
Right.
We've seen that the more tillers, that's just extra stems then, and you get more stems, you should get more heads, and kind of that equation equals usually more yield. One of the tricky parts with that tillering time is if it tillers too late, it either just won't tiller at all or it'll throw those late tillers that are kind of lower under that canopy that don't do a lot. So that is, to me, the biggest, trickiest part with this timing is if our goal is tillering, which I would say in general the goal is tillering, then you do want it. You can be too late, so you don't want to be chasing it. But there is that you can be too early too. So it's very much a Goldilocks pick of not too hot, not too cold, kind of being right where that weed is waking up, but not where it's way too early that, you know, you could lose some of the nitrogen or something like that, but not too late where you miss out on tillering. So I think this timing, that is why we talk about it. We try to figure out what's right. And the hardest part about this window is I don't think you know when the window is until the window is closed. Then you can say, well, okay, that was maybe the right window, but you don't know that.
Hindsight's always 20/20.
Yes. Yeah, because you need that crystal ball to predict when the window is, right? Right. And you have that crystal ball after that. Like, we know when the window's done, right? Because we've seen what the weather has done and what the weed have done. And you're like, oh, we missed it, you know? So that is a very good analogy, Todd, of the Goldilocks. Like, not too cold, not too hot, but it has to be just right. But we don't know when just right is.
We're kind of all just sort of not guessing, but trying to make it as much knowledgeable. This is the right time to
I think go. Some things we'll go into here after this is kind of going to give you like, okay, it's not a dartboard. We can kind of zone in on here's the factors to consider to get that just right.
Well, I think the biggest thing this year that's been kind of the X factor is moisture.
Right.
We haven't had excess moisture by any means. We're behind. And so you can spread it, but is it even going to make it into the soil?
Right. And there was a timing a couple weeks ago where guys spread and it was like it was supposed to get rain in parts and parts didn't. So you're right, Matt, about that is you're trying to time it, you know, to get some rain after. Maybe you don't want too much rain, but you want
You don't want it all washed down. Yeah. But
although I do think like we need to have like a first things first here. We need to make sure that you have a stand and that the stand is viable, right? Like, we don't want to just close our eyes and be like, well, we planted wheat last fall. Let's go spread it because that's what we do in the spring. We have to make sure that you got to assess your stand to make sure that you have a stand. And I think the good part about this year, guys, is with the warm temperatures, we pretty much know that
These stands are there.
Yep. Right. Like they look really good.
Right. In general, they are. One tricky part with that, Bill, has always been we've had stands where, so it's this decision, do you fertilize them or not? And basically, if you don't fertilize, especially early on, you're not going to get a stand. Like it is one of those things that by not doing it, when you can't be like, oh, wait till I want to plant corn to decide if I'm going to keep it or not. If you don't fertilize, you're not going to, by the time you wait that long, it's going to be too late. So there's one tricky part. And I've seen it where we've had stands that were kind of not perfect, that they didn't meet the, you know, the rule of thumb from Cool Beans, from Sean Conley is 12 to 15 live plants per, I believe it's foot of row, correct?
He stated a square foot.
Square foot, because that's the other tricky part. There's square foot, there's foot of row. So basically around, you know, that number you're going to want. And I've seen stands that are lighter, and then we get a lot of tillering.
And that's that That's a plant. So we don't care about tillers yet when you're assessing the stand. Like assess the stand. You have your 12 plants, 15 plants. Then we hit it with the nitrogen to get our tillers, and that's where we want to really promote it at that point.
Yeah, it'd be seven plants per foot of row or like 14 per square foot for kind of that minimum that you want to see. And like I said, then the goal there is you really need that nitrogen timing to be right to promote tillering on those fields, or they're not going to do well.
And Conley is a really good on his Cool Beans website. If you Google Cool Beans winter kill, wheat winter kill, there's a nice chart. It basically goes by row spacing and what's a good stand, what's a poor stand, what's a mediocre. Like, he breaks it right out how many plants per square foot you need. So that's nice too. So if we've determined that our stand assessment is where we want it to be, first things first, yep, we're good to go there. The next thing is timing. When do we want to time our nitrogen application? And the literature states growth stage. So in the feeks, growth stage 3 to 5 is where we want to be, and that's green up to pre-jointing. Well, that's a big window, right? In time, like growth stage, it's not, but in time, months, days, that's could be a long time. So, jeepers, how do we do that?
That's a very long time. I mean, you said green up to tillering,
right?
That's could be
green up to jointing.
Green up to jointing could be 6 to 8 weeks, in a window. So
then we break it down further. So if we already have 70 tillers per square foot. So we talked about plants per square foot, but now we're gonna think about, okay, when to make that nitrogen application. If we already have 70 tillers, we can delay that. We have enough. It's tillered what it's going to do, right? The nitrogen isn't going to promote any more tillers. So we can delay that nitrogen for other reasons, grain fill, protein in the grain, those kinds of things. We can delay it till just prior to jointing. So as long as we can move it out as long as we can.
I like that assessment, Bill, because I think it allows for, like we just said, if our goal is tillering and we don't have tillers, well, then obviously then
we got to do it.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
But if you have enough tillers, well, then we just want to try to feed the crop later.
Your nitrogen use efficiency goes up, right? Because you're not putting it out in March. You're probably putting it out in mid-April. It's less time for it to lose, you know, so we're going to potentially increase yield and definitely increase efficiency, which I think in the last 2 years, I've heard way more farmers talk about
nitrogen use efficiency. Yeah.
Like it isn't about, let's just whip as much out there because we don't care if we lose some. It's like, no, we gotta use that.
Be a little more precise.
Right. And in the contrary, if we have less than 70 tillers per square foot, then we need to get out there at green up and get it on, get that so we can promote that. UW's looking at some UW studies. It showed most often yields were slightly lower when nitrogen was applied in the spring, and they were actually higher. So if you just did spring only, the yields were slightly lower as compared to doing a little bit in the fall and then some in the spring. So there is some benefit to a little bit of nitrogen last fall at planting to get those plants moving and doing their thing. I looked at a study out of Minnesota. And that one stated that in fertilization as a top dress, grain yields and protein were only better when you had insufficient pre-plant nitrogen tests. So if you're nitrogen at planting, their study showed that you should be top dressing, but if you had sufficient N, it really didn't help.
Didn't make a difference.
Yeah. And then also, I did find a really good one from South Dakota State, I believe, and their responses were consistently better yield response, greater nitrogen use efficiency. So when we were doing that, so here's again some of that, like Minnesota said one thing and kind of South Dakota saying a little bit different, where the greater use efficiency was when they did a spring applied at green up. So that's probably soil type. Fertilization on frozen soils, they weren't very, this was the South Dakota one that they thought that was a very poor strategy because you have a low chance. If you're going to have a low chance of thaw before you apply, like obviously we're going to lose some of that in. It doesn't get into the soil. It moves off during snow melt. So if you're in the camp of like, yeah, there's a little bit of snow out there, maybe along like woods or in low spots, there's still a little bit of snow. Their study showed that you really should be waiting until that's all gone and the soil is going to be thawed, that the nitrogen can get year, into the ground.
I don't know that that was much of an issue. Frost never really was much of a thing.
No, and talking about doing the research for this podcast today, it almost was like, well, why are you even talking about half this stuff? Because 2024 isn't
like, doesn't have those.
It isn't like any of this.
Right.
Right? But how many years is it?
Right. Well, yeah, most time it's not the case that we have a fairly open winter with not very cold temperatures, because usually open winter means more frost because it gets cold and there's not insulation.
Right.
But this year, that just wasn't the case. We had insulation when we had the cold snaps for the most part, and now, I mean, we'll see what this next week brings. It is cooler temperatures through the next week here, but yeah, I'm talking about road limits, all that kind of stuff, they were relatively non-existent except for northern parts of the state. So,
and there's plenty of years that I remember, like the co-op's like, oh, it's the snow is gone, it's frozen, we can get out there and spread, do we want to spread? And they're calling me like, hey, we need stuff. And you go out and look at the field and it's still brown, like it hadn't,
right,
it's not, yeah, the snow's gone, but it hasn't greened up yet. And you're like, I don't know, like what if this doesn't green up, we just, let's throw some nitrogen out there and we don't have a good green up. So this year, again, talking about what's different this year, is it's cold now. We can get out there and do if we choose, and it's been green. So you know that, yep, we're probably going to have a good.
Yeah, it's at least going to take up what it can get because it's
right
actively growing.
Yep. And then there's things like UAN with streamer bars, and some of these studies was preferred over urea just because it got into the soil. You just want to make sure that the streamer bars are working properly so it's not burning the alfalfa, or the wheat, the wheat leaves. And then, of course, urea. And I think this could be in warmer climates than Wisconsin, but, you know, urea granules, volatilization if a rain's not coming. I don't think for us we get too concerned about that here.
It's colder now, but you still it's got to be in the back of your mind a bit when you're applying that.
Yeah.
Look at the weather forecast and kind of decide that. I think the stream bar thing, Bill, is that's fairly new to our area. I know it was extremely common in the Nebraska, in the Dakotas and Nebraska and all that area, but I would say for us it's within the last 5 or 10 years where, yeah, we've been able to, you know, have sprayers with streamer bars. And I would say within the last couple of years, it's really sort of exploded and more options. And that's made the nitrogen, I don't want to say it's made it more tricky because it hasn't. It's just now there's more options.
Right.
And more options mean more decisions.
Right.
So one of the tricks with that, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this, but when we were using dry, we needed the rain. We need some moisture to basically kind of activate it to get it, you know, break down those granules. Where when we're spreading the UAN out, so if we're doing 28005 or some sort of 28% kind of variant, usually it's fairly active right away. So typically I've been delaying my stream bar applications.
Because it's quicker.
Right, because it's there and ready. Like, so what I used to do, like right around the farm show in Wisconsin.
That's next week.
Which is end of March, was always like, it's time to get dry out on wheat. Not always. You can't go by calendar, but that was a good, you know, might have been a week ahead. It might have been a week after. It might have been 2 weeks, either way. But that was when dry was ready. And when we switched to the streamer bar, it feels like I can delay that 1 week or 2 weeks from that to that early time in April, usually closer to Easter. Not always, because Easter can be kind of...
Easter is next week, too.
Yeah, right. Easter can jump around. But what I would say is that we usually kind of, it's a different sort of a gauge. If you ask me, that's my opinion. Would you agree with that? Or would you say, no, when you're doing one, you could be doing the other one?
I think you'd need, like you need rain to get the granular urea into solution, right? I mean, the liquid's already in the soil, but you still need that rain to get it into the root zone and get it mixed in the soil good. So you need a rain either way. But I think you're right, Todd. Being in that liquid form, it's not like we're waiting for rain to release that granule or melt that granule essentially into the soil. The liquid's already there.
Right.
Right. And I think also the streamer bars, like historically, farmers didn't always have their own sprayers to do this right. type of thing. And I have a farm that's like loves this, what the streamer bar does, and they think it's a great idea and they want to do more of it, but they don't have a shop that's heated that they can dewinterize their right. sprayer to do it.
Right.
So they end up being like, well, I only got 100 acres of wheat this year, which is a lot for wheat, but at the same point for them on a 4,000 acre farm, it's like, I'm not going to dewinterize my sprayer to do 100 acres of wheat man. For the streamer bar, which I know is better, but the co-op's just going to do it because it's of logistics.
Yep.
You know, so that kind of plays in it. So I think as time has gone on and more farms have gotten sprayers, I think that's got more popular.
Here's the other part is I also will contradict what I said in a bit of what we said earlier. If you need a tiller, that nitrogen's got to be yeah. on. Potentially yeah. earlier than, right. than waiting. So that is one struggle with one advantage with the stream bars. You can kind of, you can do it later and, you know, not run over as much wheat because of the way the sprayers are set up and you can push that later. But you, if you have enough tillers, push it later, that's fine. But if you don't have enough tillers, you may have to do two applications, almost like you're doing in a lot of cornfields now where you have sort of your Y drop or all kinds of split end, but you could do two applications with stream bars as well, where you do an earlier one for tillering and a later stream bar application for nitrogen and protein and
plant growth.
So yep. almost like a what we used to call the weed and feed method. So the old weed and feed method was you'd go, you know, dry in late March, early April, and then at herbicide application time you'd throw in 5 or 10 gallons
with the
herbicide, and you'd try to put enough water there so you wouldn't burn it, but you still would burn it. So you could now, what's nice is pull that out, go streamer bar so you don't burn it as bad. So that's been a really good method of streamer bar. But I do feel we're still figuring out streamer bar's fit and the timing and the, do we need to split or can you kind of go for the middle or what's the best? So that's been tricky because some of those timings can be very quickly on each other as well. Like we just said, this is a big window. It's 2 months. But say you're at the, you know, 2 weeks in, you do one streamer bar application. Well, then in about 3 or 4 weeks, you're doing your second one for sure, maybe even 2 weeks. And it just feels like you're on top of the streamer. Plus, you got to get the wheat sprayed in there too. So I feel like I'm still getting streamer bars figured out. You guys maybe are in a better spot with that where you know, but more so of, When I like the timing, when it's okay to be patient and how to be patient with it, it's a little bit trickier than I thought it would be. Just more, like I said, more options, kind of more decisions to make.
I do think that farms with their own sprayers aren't as adverse to getting out there more times, right? Because then they can pay for that sprayer for more applications. And if they're doing a better job to their crop, it's like, well, we got the co-op coming once. Like, that's what we're doing. Let's figure it out. Whereas if you got your own sprayer, you can tailor.
Well, and usually you have less acres to go through. The co-op's got to get through
right
a potentially large amount with the dry, so they got to start early enough so they can get all that done in that window. Whereas if, yes, the window may be short, but if you have not many acres to do it, it's not as big of a deal to sneak out there with the stream bars and get it done.
Yeah, I think as long as you're on top of everything else, you got your planter and stuff ready, it's a good timing if you have the capability of doing it yourself. It's not as busy as, you know, once you get closer to spraying time, sometimes depending on the weather in the year, you might be getting ready to do other things. So then it's easier to just call a co-op and say, hey, just get it done. I've got other things to do. So I think there, you know, your own workload kind of plays into it a little bit too. And you mentioned the having a heated shop, and I'm just talking to a farmer last week and he got it all ready to streamer bar, and then we had a couple of cold nights, and he's like, ah, yeah, I'm glad I finally got my heated shop done, because he had to pull it in and let it sit. So, yeah, there are a lot of considerations, and the one thing we haven't really talked about yet, but I think is a good way to wrap it up, is there is such a thing as too much nitrogen out there, too, and you got to watch that. It's one reason, especially manure sometimes can be tricky. Some guys like to do manure ahead of wheat, and if you get too much ant out there, you get lodging, you get a lot of issues later in the season. So
that's a good
rates
point,
are important.
It's a good point because in corn, you know, too much doesn't lead to corn just falling over.
Right.
I mean, there's other issues with too much in corn. But in wheat, if you get too much in, you have lodging, that's not, you have a lot more
and
problems.
It's always a week before harvest, right?
Right.
Or yep. a couple, it's right. like, oh, this looks amazing. It's chest high. The wheat looks great. And then, oh, we're a couple weeks out from combining and then.
Strong wind. Boom, done.
Done. Yeah. And disease, right? I mean, the more.
Right. The thicker it is.
The thicker foliage, you get promotion of more disease.
Yep.
How much do you guys do fall pre-plant nitrate tests? I feel like that's a blind spot that I haven't. I need to do better at as a consultant.
Yeah, and wheat.
I know some of our other consultants do some and kind of say there's a spot for it. But I would agree, Bill, with you on that. It just doesn't seem like at that timing, you just aren't thinking about it maybe.
No, we're like
we're doing other soil sampling.
Yeah. Yeah. We're doing silage dry downs and stuff like that. But there's actually like in all the research I was looking at, there was a lot of different universities that kind of all were similar on what they were saying as far as like you should be doing a pre-plant nitrate test.
So explain that a bit. So you're going to do that in September, October.
Right behind the chopper.
Yeah, right.
Right or the combine.
Yeah. You can do it right at planting or even right after planting, like right around the time you're planting. The recent data says that you should be doing a 0 to 1 foot and a 1 to 2 foot. And we know how difficult that is. And doing some research with the local extension agent on alternative forages, we were having to do down to 1 to 3 feet, down to 3 feet soil cores. And some of our employees know how difficult those samples were, and we appreciate all the effort they did on those projects to get those samples. So that is a little bit difficult. So the most recent research says kind of down to 2 feet. Years ago, when I was at UW, Larry Bundy was the big wheat nitrogen guy, and his research that was right around 2000, he said we should be going down to 3 feet, which last fall there was no chance that
it was hard
happening.
To get down to 60.
Not without hydraulic sampling capabilities.
Right. So, okay, so let's just say you can. Like, we get our 1 to 2 foot cores, we got that sample, what do you do with it? Okay, so if your pre-plant nitrate test comes back under 50, because 50 is kind of that background, like, 50 is like what should be there. So if it's under 50, then we actually need to be applying 70 pounds total. Like total. So in the season. So if it's we do a little bit in the fall and then in the spring. If it's between 50 and 100, we can drop that back to 45 pounds of nitrogen on that wheat crop. And then if it's above 100, the research is saying that you got enough soil residual nitrogen there that you really shouldn't have to. I don't know that any farmers are really going to be comfortable with that. And then another caveat to the pre-plant nitrate test is if it's after soybeans, reduce those numbers by 20. So instead of 70, you can go to 50 instead of 45, 25.
So crediting, yeah.
Right.
Legume credit.
Right. And if you don't take one, then their default is just back to 70 units. If you decide, well, I'm not going to take one, or we didn't get to taking one last fall, then you got to default back to that 70 pounds because Lord knows what it could be, you know, because you didn't take a test. So I think it's a long ways away, but for my growers this fall, I'm going to probably be doing more of those pre-plant tests just to, you know, give us an idea of where we're at.
Yeah, I think that is a good point, Bill. I think it's a very underutilized, a very unknown. I'm guessing most of the growers out there don't even know that that's a nitrate test for, like, that there is one for wheat, that that's an option, and pretty reasonably cost tests to get a lot of information on, okay, what is nitrogen's always a tough thing, you know, to dial in, and any more tools we can use to dial it in, the better. So, yeah, I think it's, I would agree that at that timing, you'll have to remind me about it too, but we will do some more of those because I think it would help some of my growers, especially growers that apply in the fall, because I get enough growers we just apply in spring, but some that we do apply in fall, but to help dial that in of, okay, how much does it need right now? What is in the soil that it can grab easily? And
knowing how much to apply in the fall, right? Like,
right.
We really don't have any soil residual here. Maybe we should apply 5 or 10 pounds more than normal. Obviously, we don't want to throw it all out there in the fall because lots can happen and lose and, you know, leaching and all that, those factors in play. But
can you do a nitrate test in the spring at all? I would assume not, with the soil not being warmed up, right, and it's not right. like I know this obviously is calibrated towards that, which is nice in the fall, but that is one tricky part too, is if you miss taking in the fall, there's no, it's not like nitrate doesn't test well till like we see in corn, right. It's June or July.
Right.
So that's one tricky part with this particular test as well, is if you don't do it right away at planting, it basically doesn't really, you can't do it.
It's just something I forget about, right?
Right.
Just
right.
So, we got our weed in, and a month later, it's like, oh crap, we should have taken that test, and it just doesn't get done. So I need to do a better job.
One of the tricky parts of this, so we'll be timing those. Most of my week, guys, we want it planned it as quick as we can. So right after the bean combines leaving, they're coming in with the weed drill. So that'll be one of the tricky parts with it, is to get a timely enough result for it to work. Even corn silage, a lot of times as the chopper's leaving, you want to be planting wheat right behind it because that soil is still, you know, a little bit softer and stuff.
Well, so, like you said, it can be right after planting too. You right. Still have a time. Like,
I just do like when we are doing fall nitrogen, I really like getting that. So it technically be, as the combine leaves, they come in with the nitrogen, spread it, and then the drill will kind of work right. It in a little bit. Really like that advantage of that, but maybe that you're better off waiting to get the result back to see how you dial that in.
A consultant we all know always told me he liked better waiting till it was just starting to come up and then applying the nitrogen. So, I mean, I guess it depends on that factor too, of like you said, it's nice to be able to get that worked in a little bit
right.
with the drill, but at the same time, our falls typically are wet enough that you could do...
More so probably depends when, you know, say the beans are off late.
It's, right. What the timing
early
is
early October, yep. Well, then we got to get it in and on.
Whereas but after silage.
Right. If it's September, you'd be okay.
Yeah. I think I figured out how to remember now, Todd. We've made a very good effort, you especially, and this year for me, made a very good effort about taking those soybean cyst nematode samples.
Yeah.
And those are easy to forget about too, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
Totally forget about those. You're doing them in the fall. It's just one of those things like, hey, remember your SCN test? Remember your PPN test? Like, we can correlate those two and just keep them in the back of our mind that every fall we should be doing those two things.
Yep.
All right. Well, there you go. There's some things to consider when looking at winter wheat nitrogen fertilization. That window can be big, but also difficult to hit. Having enough nitrogen at the right times is important, but too much nitrogen could cause issues later when it comes to harvest. So now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So we discussed the lawsuit a few times on between John Deere, Kinze, and Ag Leader, and now they have announced a collaboration agreement between the three companies. So John Deere, Kinze, and Ag Leader say they will make it easier for farmers to integrate each company's equipment and technology solutions into their farming operation. It comes just months after John Deere won a $16.3 million lawsuit against Kinze and Ag Leader. Collaboration enables farmers to combine the equipment and digital solutions offered by the three manufacturers. And as part of the agreement, farmers operating Kinze and Ag Leader planting and display products will now have the option to integrate their agronomic data into the John Deere Operations Center. Companies have also agreed to resolve all outstanding litigation through an arrangement where John Deere will license planting technology to Kinze and Ag Leader, ensuring their customers continue to have access to TrueSpeed and SureSpeed technologies. So, there you go.
So, lawsuits spur agreements.
They hugged it out. It's all good. Blue, green, red, it's all
just think working that, together. I mean, now they had to pay $16.3 million, and then you wonder what the licensing fee now is to.
Right.
Because if you're Kinze and Ag Leader, like, you got to sell these planters that you got. So hopefully that went well for them. And I wonder if that was the back
licensing agreement. Like,
oh, 100%.
They're just like, oh, yeah, this is what we figure it's worth. And so,
right. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be. It's good, you know, it's good that we do have all these technologies. It's good they were able to figure it out.
Don't worry, it definitely won't get passed on to the customer at all. It's fine.
No. Or yes.
Or absolutely, always. All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So soon we will be approaching the Easter holiday, not this weekend, but the following weekend. It's a early Easter this year, so March wraps up with the celebration of Easter. And as we prepare for that, this particular Christian holiday commemorates the resurrection of Jesus Christ after he was crucified by the Romans on Good Friday more than 2,000 years ago. Easter Sunday lands on a different day each year because it's based on the dates of the spring equinox and the first spring moon cycle. It usually occurs somewhere between March 21st and April 25th. Talk about another big window right there. So what comes to your mind when you think of Easter? Well, probably a bunny, some treats, and some Easter eggs. But where does the Easter egg tradition come from? Well, Easter eggs are believed to have originated in medieval Europe, but may have also been unrelated to any Christian traditions at the time. Some historians believe Easter eggs come from the Anglo-Saxon festival in spring to celebrate the pagan goddess Aestra, the goddess who may be the namesake of Easter, represents the dawn in spring, and eggs were buried and eaten during the festival. Eggs are believed to be a symbol of fertility and rebirth of nature after the dead of winter. Many traditions of the festival of Aestra were adopted by Christian missionaries to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ as a way to encourage conversion. Easter eggs are often said to be tied into the celebration because they represent new life, though the metaphor may have been applied retroactively. And, well, we're boiling eggs and painting them, so no new life coming out of those. But anyway, if you like boiled eggs, they're tasty, I know.
Wonder if the egg, how much the egg sales increases around.
Right around Easter, yeah. Do you guys do actual dyed Easter eggs yet? Or do you, I know some people just use plastic eggs and stuff for Easter egg hunts.
Oh, for hunts, it's usually plastic.
Oh, see, when I was a kid, man, the Easter eggs we dyed, then the Easter bunny hid them around the house. Nice. And it was unfortunate if you missed one.
Did you miss any?
Yeah, you had to make sure you got the count right.
Yes.
Like, if there was a dozen hidden eggs, you better find all 12.
You'd have a smelly one after a while.
Yep. It's like, oh, I only found 11. Still so hot out there.
How hard does your Easter bunny hide the baskets? Like, is it?
Our Easter bunny is pretty.
Is he pretty tough? Or, yeah.
Yeah. Tries to be. I mean, there's only so many places you can hide in a house without, you know, cutting holes in walls or doing anything drastic.
Yeah.
I know as a kid, I don't remember if the Easter Bunny's done it for my kids at all, but as a kid, I remember being in like the washer and dryer, the oven.
Oven was always a classic because then too, if mom went to preheat the oven before realizing that, there was a basket in there, you could have problems. Or
wicker fire on Easter. Yeah.
Melted bunnies.
It'd be the downside of having a plastic basket too, like buckets. Ooh. That'd be all over. Chocolate and plastic just merged into one big gloop. But there you go. So Easter eggs are a fun tradition, and they were dyed and decorated, and that goes back again to medieval times when people would exchange decorated eggs as gifts. And then you could really get into the fancy eggs. What are those called? Fabergé eggs. Ever seen those?
No.
They're like diamond-crusted egg-shaped things that...
Okay.
Royals and stuff used to have. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy. All you need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or on Android. You need to download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. You just need to go and put in tilthegg.com/podcasts. We're also available on Amazon Music, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. It's a new technology to increase carbon and sunlight capture in corn. So Zcal has expanded their photo seed technology into corn, aiming to increase the plant's oil production in a sustainable way. So this trait allows us to elevate the overall value of U.S. corn and creates a differentiated value-added product that addresses industry demand, according to Han Chen, the co-founder and CEO of Zcal. The company's photo seed technology was initially announced in 2021 for use in soybeans, with commercialization expected for this year, the 2024 growing season. Photo seed is a trait that is meant to help capture more carbon and sunlight by increasing the photosynthetic capacity. This then results in an increased oil production and better yields without more inputs on the grower's end. So now being trialed in corn, it's been found to increase corn oil composition by an average of 23%. Photoseed corn commercialization is expected for the 2027 growing season. And according to Zcal, the use of photoseed technology has also the potential to lower a crop's carbon intensity score. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I love the picture associated with this article because it looks like someone's holding corn plants hostage. They have like a brown paper bag over the tassel and the ear.
That's normal. Yeah,
that I'm assuming to prevent fertilization.
But yes, that is.
Yeah, it looks like just looks kind of funny, but so there we go. Now that's corny this week. Since we're talking about Easter, PETA has told the White House and Jill Biden for the annual Easter egg roll that it can still be egg sighting with potatoes. So the People for Eating Tasty, Ethical Treatment of Animals, is not a fan of the White House rolling chicken eggs during its annual Easter egg roll. And so that's why the animal rights nonprofit is now recommending First Lady Jill Biden replace the cholesterol bombs with potatoes. Their argument is that potatoes are cheaper and healthier than eggs and leave birds in peace. Replacing eggs for the event would please all those who don't support, and this is quotation marks here, filthy factory farms, according to the nonprofit. So
they're filthy.
They're filthy. They're dirty. Because there's no mass production of potatoes or anything. But anyway.
They're not filthy.
They're not filthy. Just under the ground.
Can you dye potatoes or...
I would think you probably could. I mean, the skin, maybe not so much, but you might have to peel it because, it is kind of
sure.
It was just an interesting take by PETA. Yeah. Like, you can still do something. Let's use potatoes instead of eggs.
We'll just spray paint them and shellac them, and then hopefully kids won't bite into them.
Yeah.
Are they going to be baked? Like,
instead of a boiled, baked potato. We'll decorate the foil. We'll get colored foil to put around the potato. Yeah. No, that's
just weird.
It's an interesting way to go, but sure. If you really want to, I guess you could try to dye potatoes. All right. Well, let's wrap things up then here with a Field Good Friday this week. We are talking the brand new farming museum here in Wisconsin that seeks to connect public with the Wisconsin agriculture industry. And conveniently enough, it's in potato country. So Plover, Wisconsin is opening the Food and Farm Exploration Center, which is more than 50,000 square feet of interactive museum in central Wisconsin that showcases the state's rich agricultural history and innovative developments in farming. On a recent field trip, students from the Point of Discovery School in Stevens Point visited the new facility. The Food Plus Farm Exploration Center's Education Program Manager, that's a mouthful right there, Brittany Marquardt, taught a class where she challenged students to make electricity using a light bulb and a battery, teaching them the basics of circuits, and said the lesson applies to agriculture because potatoes can be used to power lights. I don't know. So the farm-to-table story, how does food start in the ground? How does it get to the grocery store? You just know that food is at the grocery store, a lot of people know, so trying to bridge the connection through opportunities at the center. So I guess if you know how electricity produces light, then you can think about the process in steps, and that's how agriculture works as well. We have to plant, harvest, produce, take to a facility to clean and package, and then go to a store. So it's an interesting way of learning about agriculture. And the hope is to reconnect society to agriculture and farmers and attract more young people to the agricultural industry. So
it's the big potato masher out front is got it, like there's just a giant potato masher.
Oh.
To kind of call you in as its calling sign, which is very cool. So
that's an interesting
yes. It's cool that it's all, I mean, we've been hearing about this for the last couple of years.
I feel like
it's coming, and yeah, it's neat that it's open.
I feel like they probably have to have a pretty good label on that potato masher for anyone to actually know what it is.
Yeah, but
I don't think there's too many people these days that use a potato masher, other than myself. I do occasionally use one. But yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked winter wheat and fertilization and timing and considerations for that. In our spotlight, we took a look at the new collaboration agreement between John Deere, Kinsey, and Ag Leader regarding high-speed planter parts. Ag History Minute, we talked the origins and history of Easter eggs. Cool Beans this week was new technology to increase carbon and sunlight capture in corn. That's corny, was PETA looking to roll potatoes instead of eggs at the Easter egg roll this year. And our Field Good Friday was the opening of the new Farming Museum in Plover, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.